Let's start. So today, again, something about global information systems development. Like I said already before beginning the recording, there is roughly half an hour of this issue in the first video lecture from last year. So we're going to continue based on that at some points. And in the end of this lecture, we're going to have some viewpoints on crowdsourcing, on which you have a couple of your articles for the exam also, but some basic ideas about that. By the way, have you had some discussion on some other course about crowdsourcing? Do you know the concept? Okay, some. What about these global issues? I guess you have some, but how much you have discussed about outsourcing kind of things? I think the basic discussion in IT management also, but now we're going to take a look at this from a few different perspectives. I just quickly show a few of the slides from the video lecture. Some of you already saw. Okay, there was a slide, this kind of slide looked a bit different in that material, about different concepts, different terminology around this. Like this insourcing means in-house, outsourcing means buying from someone else, near-shoring, off-shoring, describing the geographical distance, and so on. So, and some terminology, try to keep up with this. I'm not going to go through this again here. And one of the main key issues there was distance, and there was this kind of taxonomy from a couple of different sources. What distance and this global setting might mean, like geographical, different time zones, different legal systems and legislation in different countries, sociocultural issues, technological like infrastructure in developing countries compared to Western countries and so on, different knowledge base and such like things. So you can separate the concept of distance in these terms at least. And this is just a note from Mauri Leppänen's material from a few years ago. So when we talk about outsourcing and these kind of issues, we often simplify this kind of setting. We are not going to go to the different models much in this course, but just to know that, keep in mind that we usually simplify and we read case studies which are one-to-one setting, one company outsourcing, for example, some development in India. It's one-to-one connection, but it's only one opportunity, one option of many possible opportunities in business. So there may be one company contracting with many vendors, or the other way around, or some kind of complex ecosystem, including several parties in vendor side and the customer side, and so on. And let's not go to the details, but try to keep this in mind that this is not the only way to have one-to-one relationship between customer and client, which is usually the simplified example we use. And which is, I think it's more common in business anyway, but it's not the only way to do business. Okay, then, there are different perspectives as in those terminology issues. And I think these are often related. When the development scales up, you have a big project, you usually have several teams, usually you have them distributed in different locations. Then distributed in different locations may mean different floors in this kind of building in-house, or the neighbor building, or different towns in Finland, or globally around the world. So that's the scale. Then it's in some part of this thinking, it's different. So some factors are the same if you do global sourcing, no matter if it's insourcing, so in-house, let's build another office in China, or if you do that in outsourcing model. But some factors are possibly different. So, and then you can do insourcing, outsourcing again there in the next door, in different towns in Finland, in different geographical locations globally. So these are different perspectives. And now, when you read material, take some case study, you have to take a look at what it really discusses about. So if you search for material generally about outsourcing, it can mean anything between buying some service from the next door to India or China. And the kind of the often then the benefits are different, the expected benefits are different, the challenges are different, the whole concept is different, except that that's still outsourcing. So these are just different factors. They are often mixed, often related, but still, when you look at different challenges and benefits and so on, there are different. These all, like I showed these kind of academic categorization of different distance elements and distance, or these sourcing terminology. These are not just academic terms. These are different business strategies. Okay, I took material from a few different viewpoints, a few different sources, and one key thing, if we continue the thinking, I just tried to introduce, this is a Spanish study studying information systems outsourcing. The target group were some managers in industry, wide survey, and in Spanish industry. And so the keywords here are information systems and outsourcing. So you have to keep in mind in this overall discussion this perspective that, like I just said, outsourcing here may mean anything between the next door or China. So, and that's completely different setting. So they are all here together when they generally asked about outsourcing, not defining what's the geographical or cultural distance in outsourcing and such like things. So generally outsourcing, and then information systems, the target group is a bit different from which we have been focused on in this course. We speak about systems development, and if we ask, like in this study, from general IT people, that's much more in IT in a factory, for example, than systems development. That's a bit different concept. So this results doesn't consider only development, but different IT functions in any company. So that's the background. This is the background for these results. You have to keep in mind. So a couple of slides of this. This is from a literature review they did for the study. This is not the actual survey results. Just general reasons why the companies do outsourcing. So the whole point here is to show that the reasons are... The first case comes to your mind when you hear about outsourcing is possibly some Western company building up a factory in China or something like that to save some costs because the labor is cheap there and so on. And this business, that's only part of the reason. And like I said, this outsourcing, mainly mean outsourcing from the neighbor building, not from the other side of the world also. But generally, obviously, cost reduction is there. But then you may aim for to get some knowledge or researching resources which you don't have in-house. That's kind of more strategic reason or different kind of strategic reason. This comes again in several cases in this lecture. So focusing on basic competences, that's kind of trend in many fields in industry. You focus on your basic core business and try to outsource everything else. You have limited resources and you focus them strategically on the core business. So, guaranteed service and systems availability. This is more about general IT stuff. Some company which is specialized in that may be better in those issues, then they have better resources and better capabilities than some in-house IT department in a traditional factory, for example. Having access to high-level technical stuff, many of these are related issues. So, again, if you have an IT department in a traditional factory, let's say, some specialized company may have better skills for what you need. Improving quality, part of the reasons relate to the same thing. The other part may be like you can outsource, for example, testing of software. Let's take this software development as an example. You have limited resources in your software development department, and then you focus on some other things with the limited resources and decide to outsource extensive testing for the software, for example. One example of this. Then developing IT applications faster, again, you may get better resources with outsourcing than you have in-house. Reducing technological risk. Again, about skills and improving technological flexibility. So if you have in-house department, you do an investment in the people, their skills, the technology you have in-house, and the skills are based on some technology you have selected to use in-house. So this is one strategic reason for outsourcing generally in many cases. So it gives more flexibility. If something changes in the technological environment, if you have in-house group only, you have made huge investment in some kind of technology that suddenly becomes outdated in the business. You need new skills, so it's more flexible to outsource those functions to the company which already has expertise in that specific technology. Joining the fashion. No one in the survey, basically no one agrees that they are doing this just for fashion, but in general it's there. So in many cases, I think many failure cases, if you read them, of outsourcing or offshoring somewhere far Asia for cost savings. If you read the failure cases, in many of them, the planning and the kind of reasoning for the whole business case has been weak from the very beginning. So the origin was that the manager read some success story in a paper and try to do the same in the company and with weak reasoning. It was a starting point in many cases. Then briefly the same was asked from the managers in the company in the Spanish industry, that was again. And this was the order of the answers they got. So just a couple of main points here. When you ask from the managers generally about outsourcing, the cost savings are just on the 7th position here, not on the top. So I would guess if you prioritize this or focus this on the companies who do offshoring to Asia, that would be in game always, not the only reason, but it's part of the reasoning. Usually if you do the outsourcing far, but generally in this data, wide survey in Spanish industry, it was on the 7th place, not far away from the most important reasons. So those strategic reasons, like this technological flexibility, so to avoid that your technology gets outdated in-house, or improving quality, focusing on strategic issues, that was the top one. So you focus on your core business and outsource everything else. That trend you can see here. Okay, one different case study. This is, I'm trying to think, yeah, the origin is in German. Okay, German car industry. And they do outsourcing in China. That's the background. And just quick points from here is that the whole paper discusses and different motivations they had to do the outsourcing case in China and the barriers. So, and this outsourcing doesn't mean the actual car factories. It's included in the business chain, but this considers the R&D department. So software, this is not only software, but software is part of that development. And I think BMW was at least part of this study. Okay, that's the background here. And you can see some differences in this from this general thinking in IS sector here. So, like, motivations part first and left. Okay, compliance with regulatory requirements mean in this case that if I understood right, it was briefly explained in the paper that, and I don't know car industry well, so it's, there was some legislation in China that if some foreign car industry wants to come to the Chinese market, that was the case here. It was strong motivation there to get to the Chinese market, not only to manufacture cars and get cheaper development in China. But China is promising a big growing economy. They want to get to the Chinese market also. That's at least a big part of this story. So they in China, they have some legislation that if some foreign company wants to go in automotive business to the market, they must do some cooperation with some Chinese company in the field. I don't know the details, but that it means this. So there are this kind of restrictions. So then they wanted to, anyway, the cars were to produced and manufactured in China. So they wanted to bring, they saw some benefit for bringing the development R&D department, which is focused on the Chinese sector, close to the actual production to help that sector of communication. Okay, then car parts are anyway manufactured close there in Asia, possibly in China also. So the whole supply chain is close. They saw that as a benefit. Then it's close to the customers and market. You get expertise from China to build cars for Chinese. You do some national adaptations in such like cars as BMW also. I don't know. I'm not expert. I don't know how big the change differences are in different markets, but you do some changes and you need some local experience. Okay, relief for main development. Okay, this means this limited resources. They had huge pressure in the main headquarters of R&D in Germany. If they get new resources in China, that helps a bit in the main headquarters. That's the idea. So the last two one. Okay. If you, they are a bit related to the same phenomenon. They think that in China, a company like BMW has a good high reputation. It's nothing special in Germany. A lot of car industry there. If BMW wants to recruit people in BMW in Germany. There's nothing special. It's just Monday. If you go to China, that's special. It's interesting for the people to join that kind of Western company with high reputation. So, and for that, they thought that they have some, in the whole supply chain and in the whole business, they have better chances for the competition. So also in China. So, okay, let's go to the other side. These are some specific to the automotive industry. They seem to be really worried about IP rights. I don't know much about this either, but something what I've heard, you don't see much illegal copies of cars in Finland, but it's some kind of trend going on in China. They don't want to give. And Chinese are not very good and known about protecting IP rights there. So they don't want to lose the business for illegal factories. So that's one worry about this whole business chain and changing that development part to China. Okay, lack of highly qualified personnel. Okay, there are two sides. They found finally that it wasn't easy to find proper personnel in China for this development. But on the other side, they initially thought that they would be in good position with this kind of reputation as their company had in Chinese labor market. There is still a huge number of potential labor. So, okay, high qualification. Okay, this means basically when they didn't get easily properly trained people in China, they had to spend some time and effort for training them. Okay, they need expats, some people from Germany, basically, Western people there to handle part of the business. That's expensive. You pay high salaries and costs. And also the Chinese personnel, I didn't know this when I read the paper, their finding was that especially for management in China, according to this paper, they had to pay the same money or even more than in Western countries. So the factory labor is cheap, development is still much cheaper, basic engineering work in China compared to the Western countries, but they have high salaries for the management. So that balances the cost difference. Okay, inefficient. If you keep as much as possible in the headquarters in Germany, in this case, it's much more simple. But when you expand the supply chain to different locations and globally and different places. I don't know about this case, but just example from another paper I read. When they did this kind of work, they had some kind of engineering work. I don't remember the actual background for the case. They transcribed basically all the material from Western part of the team. It was cooperation with some Western country and China, and some of the documents came from the Western part, Western team in English. They sent some of the documents were handwritten and something like that. They had to transcribe those handwritten documents to Chinese for the Chinese engineers. Just one example of the overhead costs and difficulties in this kind of setting. Okay. Okay, now let's forget the cars. Let's get forward. Generally, in this paper I've used here, they categorize kind of extra costs you get from, okay, the key word here is offshore outsourcing. Okay, now we are talking about systems development and offshore outsourcing. And so the case typically, if you read case studies, you have a Western country, and then you have a software company in India, most typically, or in China sometimes. The most common cases, if you read the papers. So they divided these extra costs in these four categories, which requirements and specification and design. Okay, to make it simple, compared to some super agile practices we have discussed on this course. If you have a small team in the same place at the same time, you can share much information informally. You can get to know the domain of the project and so on. If you do this from Western country to India, you must use a lot of time for specific design and good specs so that they really understand what to do. So this kind of formal communication, that's part of the overhead. Knowledge transfer, you have to be on the same page. It's not just technical specs of the software, it's domain knowledge. I don't know what are really the differences, but let's say we are building a new hospital here in Jyväskylä, and if we would outsource some software development related to that to the other side of world, India, China, whatever. Okay, they have some idea of hospitals. Hospitals are everywhere, but they don't know Finnish legal system, something. Okay, there is some expertise we need even for Finns doing that work in the project, but there are some differences which I don't know. That means that possibly all the others possibly related in such project don't know. So the Indian group may have an idea of Indian hospital, and we have a clear idea of Finnish hospital, and though those may be mostly same, but some but partly not. And so you must ensure that you have a similar understanding and knowledge. of the project. Okay, just one example. There are different kind of similar communication needed for any project. Control means in this kind of offshore setting that that you have to assure the quality of the deliveries from the outsourced team. Coordination general, okay, that relates to any kind of scaling up. If you have big organization and anything, you need more coordination, different teams, and whatever needed for that. Just a couple of points from this paper. Those are some kind of general categories you can take a look. Just to take any case, you can study the issues in that specific case with those categories. That's the idea of this categorization. But a couple of specific points from this paper. So they found that when the client-specific information, this is pretty obvious. If you need something that's specific to the to that project or client, the costs are extra high in this kind of outsourcing setting. Let's say this, if we have, okay, this is natural. When you have new relationship, you need some practice. Even if you do some outsourcing to the next door, different company, different practices there, and so on. This whole relationship is new. We have to practice how to handle it. We must agree how to do it, and so on. The same goes, but it escalates. Escalates if you go far. And then the other thing, the more you need information about the domain, the more you have to focus on sharing that information, the more costly it is. And it's nothing special there. Okay, cultural and geographical distance. Okay, the more distance you have, the more are the costs. Natural. Okay, then one thing here you meet in different cases when you read about outsourcing generally, or especially offshoring. In labor markets, like in China, in India, it's the most common case story in the software business. You have a vendor in China, in India. So there, compared to the Western companies, there is high turnover rate of the personnel. So they're experienced, highly skilled. They may be highly skilled and also experienced engineers, but they change to better position there often. It's part of the working culture there. They change to another company very often. And that, so that's referred in many of the cases with outsourcing to India or some other we regard as developing countries. So, and that causes high extra costs again. So you need to train new people again and again and again, even if the salaries are low. Okay, the next study we take a look at, this was a literature review. The keyword used here was global software engineering. That's one of the keywords you could use if you find material in this field. So this is software development section, and often stories with this keyword, they refer to global offshoring. So outside of your own country. So it was stated here that, okay, there are different reasons for offshoring, like the ones we went through based on some other material. You may aim for getting skilled resources from other country also, which you don't have so easily near. But usually the cost saving is main driver or at least included in the case. So what they did, they took a look at 500 papers, searched with these keywords, global software engineering. The main conclusions from them that only 14% of these papers had any kind of evidence of cost savings. Okay, that was the keyword. They focused on cost savings in this kind of offshoring setting. But only a fraction of papers in the overall mass included any kind of evidence on cost savings. Again, and about that evidence, it didn't prove very strong evidence. They found that it's hard to see the background for the calculations. It's just claimed in most of the papers that they had some savings based on in this case, but they don't show the calculations. It's not transparent. But that's the academic part of the discussion here. Their overall finding, and we have to remember of this. You have to understand the limitations of the study. They cannot claim, based on this kind of literature review, that offshoring doesn't provide cost savings. But they try to see challenges in that. They try to find some reported evidence, and they didn't clearly find it. The overall findings are here. They means that they selected a number of papers that were the most high quality in the overall mass that included some evidence. Okay, they rated in some scale how strong the evidence was. That you see the details in the paper if you are interested in, which means circumstantial or strong evidence in this scale. But of the evidence, if we don't care about that, roughly half of the papers including evidence had some evidence for cost savings in offshoring, and about the same number of papers didn't find cost savings. And there are several interesting points in the paper, but that's just a few comments. So, okay, with a small number of papers, it's pretty natural, but they didn't find any, based on this data at least, they didn't find any connection between cost savings and the sourcing models. In this, they mean that if you did the sourcing in-house, so if you built a new office inside company in India compared to the case that you outsource from an Indian vendor. So, and then basic trends. The cases are different, the reasons are different, and so on. It's hard to generalize, and the data is, again, small here. But if you try to look some kind of trend, the main trends are here that this is pretty natural. It makes sense that when you have to communicate to the other side of the world, highly distributed, different cultures and communication issues and such like things. So those projects which were easy to communicate, so simple, basic projects, not much that would require high level of management or expertise or domain knowledge. So those were the successful ones. Or on the other side, again, natural. If you need some domain expertise from the customer side, which you would have to transfer to the other side of the world, or you need highly technical special skills, so on. And so there wasn't, or have legacy systems or such like things. So those weren't the successful ones. Okay, and again, it was said, but only in the first lecture, that in some other case that follow the sun development. So follow the sun meant that let's build three different offices globally in three different time zones, so we can work 24/7 clock around, basically. Or at least 24/5. I don't know how they work, but again, it was concluded here that it doesn't seem to provide any cost savings for some overhead costs of the management. Okay, they give some recommendations. Some are pretty obvious, but some interesting points here. Obviously, plan carefully. They mention a couple of special risks in this kind of projects. Okay, obviously, selection of the provider, it's one important and obvious risk for the upcoming reasons. So it's different. I can imagine, I haven't done that, but I can imagine that if I have experience in software business in Finland, even decades, I know how the Finnish business work. I know how the software engineering works here. But if I try to find a vendor from India, I don't know how the labor market works there. So it's a big step and an investment and such kind of relationships. And that the second point they mention again, that high turnover rate. So at least take that into account in the consideration and calculations is their message here. The second is that do not focus only on salary levels. So usually, their warning is that usually the actual cost savings are less than expected. There are a lot of hidden costs included. Let's not go there now. Let's set clear goals, the third point. The first, they emphasize that pay for the results, not per hour. A couple of interesting cases they refer to, I haven't seen the actual case reports, but in some Ireland company outsourced to Malaysia, in that setting, the salary level was half of the Irish salaries, but they found out eventually that the Malaysian company didn't have the expected level of experience and skills for that project. So that kind of ate all the cost savings. And then the other even bigger difference in some US-India relationship case, the salary rate was 1-8 even, but in that case, based on this paper, all the overhead costs in that setting ate all the savings. And that's, okay, that's big. Okay, maybe the most important things, for me at least, are in the end. So do not expect immediate cost savings. So understand that this kind of offshoring, it's an investment. Learning curve, in the references they have here, it may be 2-3 years for the developers when you create relationship to a new vendor. And like everywhere, the projects often encounter problems before running smoothly. So the overall picture here is that it takes time before you get some benefits. So calculate. So the same first author, a different paper, they did a study that demonstrates some kind of calculation. So the calculation is limited here. But the case is real. They have actual data from 2013, okay, from 1 year. And then they started the relationship 5 years earlier than a Dutch company and vendor in India. And they, based on some facts they had from the history, they estimated the possible costs in different sites for the whole 5 years. That's the main point in this story. So they let's not go to the details here, but just the idea here that they try to calculate how much the work costs per hour, including salaries, travel costs. Here are some control costs, recruitment fees, explained training. So here are some just like direct costs in this table. And then in another table, they present some indirect costs included. And again, this is limited. You could potentially, I can imagine several other factors you could include this kind of calculation, but this is one example. So they took into account these kind of costs. They compared the team in Netherlands and team in China, and the overall result was here. So they put together the whole 5 years. Like I said, these are not exact number and calculation are limited, but the most important numbers are these true hourly costs. In the middle of the table for that Indian team, starting from more than 700 euros and ending with 47 in 2013. And then they calculated some average in there. And then the same numbers for the Dutch team in the Netherlands. And what you can conclude of this, that it took 5 years from this company to start get some benefits in terms of money based on this calculation from that vendor relationships. So there are no fast benefits based on this, at least. So, and still after 5 years, the average cost was higher with the Indian team. But for the past couple of years, it's been somewhat lower. So the main points here, okay, at least some points of the paper. So focus on the vendor selection. So it's plan this in long term. Partnership is important. There is long learning curve, how to do this overall to educate people and so on. So, and again, in this case, the turnover rate of the personnel was much, much higher in the Indian team. That caused some part of the retraining and extra costs here. Given, then I think this is my last case about this. Yes, just quickly a few points. This is, by the way, an interesting paper if you're interested in to take a look at it. It's a very detailed story of one case in which a large Danish company, if I understood it, the description of the paper. You can compare it with Finnish Tieto, for example. So several thousand employees work globally. It was about, there is a lot of interesting stuff in the paper. Much of the failures and incidents during the project were simple human issues, not related specifically to offshore setting. But it's a nice story. But some points there. It was a large project, a public sector project in Denmark, and they had a team in India. They used some kind of Scrum kind of practices. They didn't give very detailed explanation of the practices, but that's the background. They tried to do some kind of agile kind of development based on fixed scope of the project of the public sector. So they had specs and fixed scope. And this caused some tension. That's one part of the story, not very big part of the story, but anyway. Okay. That project had pretty complex setting, large. Some technical skills or high level of technical skills were needed. Business logic, this kind of domain understanding was needed. And the project, based on what we have just come through, not very good science for offshoring project. So part of the background. And they had this Scrum meetings daily. That's one detail. But still they had insufficient communication. They just agreed some tasks for the day and went through quickly some tasks in the backlog. But they didn't discuss about details, how to do work and share information. One of the mistakes there. A lot of silly details in the paper if you look at it. So stuff changed during the project. One kind of, how do you put it? It's okay. We discussed something like this in some with Agile. That it was actualized in this case. That they so much focused on the sprint backlog in each sprint, the functionality, and the management so much wanted to mark functions as completed, and that was the main focus there, that the even half-completed requirements in some point, they were marked as complete, and quality was very poor in the end, and then that, for that, in many times they had to do rework by the Danish team in Denmark. Okay, it's so long and detailed paper. It's hard to explain it briefly, the whole background there. But so part of the thing was this kind of political, that basically, a lot of things in overall management, general project management, human issues between people, and very many things were wrong, really off. And in the case, but still, for long, officially, this was a successful project. So this was the claim by the management. So the management, to the very end, wanted to keep this kind of picture. That they had made the decision to invest in offshore vendoring. They wanted to have that successful. And no matter what happened under that, it was still successful in the formal communication. And you can read there are several interesting consequences about this. Let's use much time for this. And either this, but my overall message here is that you can take some time yourself and think about this. But now we discussed mostly about the business issues, not so much about the development, but these same kind of questions we have raised several times during the course. Try to think what this means in context of outsourcing. And again, you must start with the question, what is outsourcing in this specific case? I'm thinking about, is it the next door? What is the difference? What is the distance culturally, geographically, and so on? What the outsourcing means? And then, how does this affect the whole way of development? Do we have to do project management differently? Other development practices, if we want to be agile, what it is in this kind of global setting? What are the tools needed for this and this? Just to remind, these are the general questions you want to always ask. This is a bit different kind of doing development from having that small team locally, same place, same time. So it doesn't mean just that let's do the same thing, but globally. Many things are related, and you have to do some rethinking on several things and functions and practices in the organization. Okay, for the rest of the lecture, some words about this. You have your course readings about this, but some thoughts, quick introduction. Trying to think about a proper question for this, but how many of you know that you have been part of crowdsourcing? How many of you have participated? No? Yeah, I guess you can. Yeah. In some form, it's okay, it's not easy to define the whole concept, but okay, let's start with the basic background. We're not talking about software yet, but basically this is the phenomenon. When we have internet, we can communicate easily, fast, globally, again. So in different kind of businesses, we have started more and more to speak about crowds, how to benefit of the crowd, and how that changes the business. And somehow, okay, Airbnb and Uber are the most common examples for the beginning. So it has changed the whole business, not just the hotel chains that offer accommodation or taxi business, not yet in Finland, but it's coming, I think, with Uber. And so on. iStock photo, it's one example of the services online. You get high quality photos, and some decades ago before this kind of services, some professional photographers got some number of euros per picture. So this kind of services have taken part of their business in the field. Or then we speak about crowdfunding, Kickstarter. Have someone ordered something from Kickstarter participated. Do you know the idea? Okay, you know the idea. So folded, that was new to me when I read material. I'm not capable to fully explain this, but it's something like a group of scientists that have worked with proteins in human DNA or what, I don't know. But completely scientific thing, and that what enables this, what I understand, you need a huge amount of human work, some kind of model, the combinations, that kind of work that cannot be automated easily for a computer to do calculations with these different combinations. There is some part, this part I don't understand, what is the need for human work there. But the point is that they need a lot of human work, human kind of problem solving skills for this. And they programmed a game, shared it to the thousands of people, and the game is something about problem solving. And those results of human problem solving in the game, they use somehow as the data for calculations for some scientific phenomenon for proteins in human DNA or whatever. That's as much as I can explain of that. Find out yourself if you're interested. But the results, I've seen only references, is that some work they have tried to think in the small researcher group for years. In some paper it was 15 years, I don't know what's the actual comparable number, but they could get comparable data to solve some scientific problems in some weeks with the data from thousands of people in that game, in folded website. That's the basic idea. It's like Amazon Mechanical Turk. Has someone tried? No, it's been there for 10 years or something like that. I haven't either. But it's a marketplace that Amazon has that in which you can find. Okay, you speak about micro tasks there. You again, if you need some human work for something that cannot be easily automated for computers, and you need a lot of it, you can pay something like a couple of cents per task. And in the service, you may offer a job, or you can register as employee there. And the examples they give in the website are like they're transcribing some speeches, videos, some labeling, some pictures. I could easily think about like how much some Google archives have some pictures, and it could bring some value if you create labels that you have coffee in the picture or whatever. You can use that kind of information generally. You have some random pictures, and so that kind of picture labeling. Okay, it's something that computers are not very good at, that kind of tasks. And in that kind of marketplace, you can share the work. Okay, one example, it's quite an opposite to the micro-tasking. If you do that kind of picture labeling, you get some cents per picture at most. Okay, otherwise it wouldn't be affordable. Some years ago, Netflix, they had a contest for suggestion. Okay, they wanted to renew the suggestion system in their web service, or whatever service it is, depending on the platform. But I think their price was something like $1 million $1 for the winner. So getting new ideas. Okay, just a few examples here. But overall, this is about, there is a crowd, and the, also the business. Okay, in Airbnb or Uber or iStock Photo, it has changed the business. But more and more, also in software industry, it has raised different kind of ideas how to benefit of the crowd when we do business in the field. Okay, there is one definition often referred in the field. They think, I think the name crowdsourcing is often related to this reference. At least this definition. Okay, it's a bit more than 10 years old, but of course we have done something like this hundreds of years, like competitions for architectural design of important buildings. So, but where I have for the first time met this kind of thinking that has changed software development or business in the field. A couple of examples. I'm not sure how well these fit to that specific definition. It's hard to define this kind of phenomenon. It's, there is no one crowdsourcing, but it's kind of ambiguous field. It depends a lot of different models and different motivations. What you can do, some very innovative things, some things we have done for years. But a couple of examples first come to my mind. So, like, when Apple released App Store and all the other competitors followed pretty much, that changed the market and the field. It was different. If we look at Nokia, for example, for very long, they kept the whole business in their own hands. That was really new. If you have a phone and you had the whole chain of production, content production in your own hands. Okay, you had some games outside vendors, but pretty much that was pretty big change in the business. If you only offer the platform like in Apple Store, you don't care how much you have content there. You just focus on the core functionality. And then open the business, they provided support for software developers and all the stakeholders in the field to develop software for their platform. And they were, it was a big change. I can't explain briefly here. But the other example, Nokia, it was Linux platform used for a system called MIMO in Nokia settings. It was a tryout in before the touchscreen phones. They had a couple of, they called them internet tablets, this size of the tablets. It wasn't phone, but just for internet browsing. It was something like 2004-05 in the market. Didn't succeed very well just before the time. So, but what they did, they took Linux platform instead of Nokia's own Symbian. Another big step. They had built up the Symbian platform from scratch themselves. They had it completely in their own hands. They did all the work themselves, or some sub-vendors, whatever. But basically, it was in their own hands. But they tried this Linux platform in this project. They took Linux platform And it changed the thinking. You don't get it for free. There are a lot of details to think about, but it was an interesting story back then. You didn't think about it so much. It's a huge strategy change for Nokia at that time, so it didn't continue for some reasons. I don't know the story, but then you take a Linux platform, open source, you get most of the platform for free. So it decreased the development time significantly compared to that from scratch on their own style. But it doesn't come for free, because the open source community, they develop the features, what they want, what they are interested in. If Nokia wanted some specific features they need, they had to develop it themselves. And again, it's a different business strategy. They don't keep them themselves, but they give their inputs to the community again. And actually, in this kind of logic, the whole around this kind of open source development, many stakeholders with the big products like Linux platforms, Apache web servers, and such like things, the many providers in open source community are actually companies who benefit of that, not just some single developers who do it for fun. Okay, it would be a long story, but just trying to remind myself and which kind of cases I first met this idea about crowds in software. Okay, this is one try of categorize different kind of crowdsourcing. Okay, four categories in this picture. In left upper left corner, you have such kind of tasks. It's easy to explain with the examples. You have some user ratings, for example. So the overall work of number of people create the actual value. So there is no much value if you get rating from one user, but the overall value comes from the mass. Okay, briefly, the upper right is something where you create together with others. Open source software is an example of this. Again, then, down left corner, you have some small independent tasks that are not related. They are valuable as they are, independent on each other, and okay, the scale is how homogeneous or heterogeneous are the tasks. Again, example of the homogeneous tasks in the left side are, for example, bug reporting, and this, or right example here is Stack Overflow. Is I think it's the world's biggest discussion forum with software developers. There you can ask questions and offer solutions to the others. Okay, some kind of picture. There are different models, different kind of reasons to make this. Okay, some more examples. In this paper referred here, there are three models presented for crowdsourcing. This peer development is the first one. So you think the crowd as peers, you benefit of each other somehow, like open source development or that Stack Overflow discussion forum for software development issues. Okay, The other, you see that a lot in the papers, if you take a look, that competition part. I refer to the Netflix competition, or we have had those architectural competitions for ages. Top Coder is one referred source. You have this referred in your course readings. In the readings, you have one literature survey. I'm just scratching a bit surface. You have more, wider taxonomy in the paper for different kind of crowdsourcing models in that literature review paper. So then you have a detailed case study which used actually this Top Coder platform for competition-based crowdsourcing. So this is really interesting phenomenon. I would like to know more details. Unfortunately, I don't know how it happens in practice, except I've just read a few papers. It's in Top Coder, as it's presented in the papers, like in your course, the paper in your course readings, the idea is that at least in some cases you can break down the whole software project to smaller tasks. You get some support, I think, from Top Coder for that also. And then it's divided to some subtasks. Let's say you have a project and it's divided to 50 different subtasks. And then of each task, you arrange a competition. The key idea is that Top Coder has, at least in their register, they have hundreds of thousands of developers. So there is a big mass. And so you can get submissions and you select the best and give the prize and so on. And in the best case, you get the whole software project run in the system. The part that I don't understand how it can happen in practice for the whole project, but you have some questions raised in the paper in your course readings also, and it appeared that in that case you didn't get submissions for all parts of the project, but pretty well for some parts. And then there are some other issues discussed. Read yourself, but that's the basic idea there. Okay, some companies, I think Google has raised some campaigns now and then that if you find some serious security vulnerabilities in our products, we give a prize. Okay, let's go forward. The third category is this kind of microtasking. I explained briefly that Amazon Turk labeling pictures and something like that. I think the most common example in software engineering context is testing. You can easily have something like environments available in which you have again a big number of potential testers. And in some models, you, for example, pay per bug. And if you get some bug listings from the participants, and if you agree the bugs, and you pay per bug some, I don't know how much money per bug, but that's sometimes the idea. Okay, generally, you get the same thing in your course reading. Let's not stop here. But of course, that was motivation of the customer, the company who wants to use the crowdsourcing. But the other side is, of course, the motivation of the crowd. That's the key point. So, if you want the benefit of the crowd, you must get the crowd interested in task. So it's, there may be, okay, this is typical way to say to way to categorize motivations, intrinsic or extrinsic. I think this is familiar from different contexts. So the people may have interest in software, and this depends so much on the context. What kind of tasks you would have for crowd? So in open source context, often the participants have some personal interest. They may use the tools for hobby or for the work, for example, some software development tools. There is a big number of software developers who use them and would be interested in develop them for free to make their own life better. Skills development, some participate this, let's say, IT students globally to develop the skills or some maybe some CV if you do significant number of participation in this field. Okay, common good, it's close to some may develop some open source for common good without expecting much for themselves. And okay, one thing, freedom that relates to the comparison. I don't know how good you have to be in this kind of environments if you do that professionally, but some could possibly be freelancers and choose the freedom to select the task they do, whenever they do, and so on, instead of being hired for the company. Okay, this extrinsic motivations, those competitions, obviously we refer to them. Then that folded case for protein modeling issue, it was gamification. I don't have a good example for software development field. Okay, then we have some rewards, obviously, like in those micro-tasking things. You get some fee for doing the work. And then in the, and I show a couple of examples in software development specifically, very briefly. Okay, sorry, these are, for me at least, these are very boring examples, something we have done about this kind of things for a long time in the field. But maybe the idea here is to show that when we speak about the previous kind of game changers in the field, starting the whole story from Airbnb that has changed the whole business, it's not often the case. So in most of the cases, if you look about the actual development and how to use crowd there, and they are pretty simple things we have done for long, but let's think about this through and do this a bit more systematically. Like this is one example, recent paper from last year about requirements engineering. Okay, the starting point is that, in requirements engineering, in this, which kind of context we could use a large group of people? Obviously, they are software products often, if you speak about software. So, not single project, product business, in which we have a lot of customers or potential customers, let's use them. Of course, we have done this along to collect customer feedback and so on. The whole point is, let's do this a bit more systematically. So, how the main elements here, what is the crowd we want to include, how to motivate them, how to get them participate in, then part of the picture, if we have an actual users, many systems collect systematically some data from the use of the system automatically, you don't need any feedback. So many of the systems you use daily basis do that reporting to the producer automatically. So, but then you just have to think about these parts. How to motivate the crowd, how to collect the data, how to analyze the data and use that in practice. Some of the things are possibly not trivial. If you get data from thousands and thousands of users, you have a lot of data. You can't possibly go that through manually, all the data, and make use of it. And you have to figure out how to use the data. So, but basically, nothing interesting, nothing so special here, which we don't know already. Just in the field, just think about the thing and how to do this systematically. So, and in the end, a couple of examples from software testing part. Another paper which presented a few examples. And in the paper, there are three different examples demonstrating how the crowds can be different, this kind of thinking. Runkeeper is a mobile app tracking. If you go running, it tracks your run based on GPS and gives some data. Like there are dozens of other applications like this. Runkeeper is one of the biggest, I think. So the thing, what they did for their product, the background was that they have a lot of users actually. It's a widespread product. It's a relatively small house, very limited number of developers. And it was a strategic kind of outsourcing decision for them. But what's different from outsourcing more traditionally is that they used a specific service that is focused on providing this kind of crowd for testing. It's referred to it. This kind of applause website, they have more than 200,000 registered people for this kind of testing tasks. And in this case, the runkeeper, so they decided to focus on the more core tasks in development with their own development team and outsourced the testing for some part of the testing, at least, for the crowd. And they used this kind of service. They didn't use crowd for testing. They selected of that pool from that service, it was something like 20 experienced testers. So they were in that service, they were able to select themselves the testers of the pool that the service provided. That was the basic idea. And then, the second example was how to do this internally in a company. They had the large company and they got something like 100 to 200 participants in a company for a project. They did this systematically. They were the final end users. They participated this project voluntarily as part of their work. But the crowd came from the company. Read the paper if you want details about that. Just briefly examples. In banking sector, one example, they did testing with the customers. This feels a bit critical with if you have a banking software there. But they found a solution to the idea was that they could select the customers for different kind of tests, and so they didn't provide a new beta version or something like that you use in different occasions for all the customers in public and try this. But they selected some number of customers and provided different questions for testing for different customers who, and they integrated that testing and kind of customer feedback platform on actual on that actual product. How to explain it easily? It's so they used a normal banking software. The selected customers used a bit new version of the system and got some reporting tool integrated in that same software. But again, read the paper if you want to get the details. But here are just some examples how to see the crowd. The point of this couple of later slides that you don't have to get a huge mind-blowing idea of how to innovatively and creatively use crowd to change the whole business, but there are different ways. You just have to think about it a bit. Okay, that's it for today. Here, I just have the references to the course readings you have for the exam here. The first one is the literature survey, having a broad picture, again, of different models for crowdsourcing, and the second one is detailed case study of one case. Okay, Tuesday again for the last time for this course, and we are done.